Welcome to the 2011 Formula One Teams Association Fans Forum podcast, brought to you by Autosport and USP Content. Part 1, the team principals, featuring FOTA chairman and Vodafone McLaren Mercedes team principal Martin Whitmarsh, Mercedes GP Petronas team principal Ross Brawn, Marussia Virgin Racing sporting director Graham Loudon, and deputy team principal of Force India F1, Bob Fernley. Let's join FOTA Fans Forum host, James Allen.
Let's welcome on the first panel, please, the chairman of FOTA, the team principal of this amazing team, Vodafone McLaren Mercedes, Martin Whitmarsh. One of the most successful engineers in Formula One, multiple world championship winner with Ferrari. Can I say that in this room? Yes, of course I can. With Ferrari. Of course, won in his own name in 2009 with Jenson Button. Now he's heading up Mercedes-Benz. The one and only Ross Brawn, ladies and gentlemen. One of the very exciting new teams that came onto the grid last year, backed by Richard Branson's Virgin Company, the sporting director and president of Marussia Virgin Racing. Please welcome Graham Loudon. And a man who spends a lot of time here because they have a partnership deal on engines, gearboxes, and you name it, with McLaren and Mercedes. Of course, it's Force India's F1 team's deputy team principal. Please welcome Bob Fernley. So, it's question time. We've got a lot of questions to get through here. We'll try and be as concise as possible, won't we, gentlemen? Now, obviously, we've been talking a lot over the years about technical innovation and entertainment. We've got a question from Stephen Hopkinson. Is Stephen here? There he is. Could you stand up, please, Stephen? Stephen wanted to ask... Can you get a microphone to Stephen, please? Stephen wanted to ask a question all about how you trade off Formula One being seen as the peak of technological innovation in motorsport. Oh, away, over you go.
Do you believe that it's important for Formula One to be seen as the peak of technological innovation in motorsport? And conversely, do you believe that the increasingly restrictive regulations are damaging that image?
Thank you very much. Martin, do you want to kick off that one?
Well, yes, well, welcome anyway to MTC again, but I won't go on about that. It is clear that Formula One has to be the pinnacle of motorsport. I mean, it's the bit that differentiates it from the other branches of motorsport. So we have to have that balance all the time. Ross and I know we go back, we used to have all sorts of contests in technical working groups arguing about active ride and all sorts of technologies that certainly then I was very passionate about. But I think there's got to be a balance. I think we have to have the most advanced vehicles in the world in motorsport. We have to balance and control performance. The circuits have to be safe that we race on. The technologies that we develop have to be relevant. They can't be completely irrelevant. I think, for too many occasions, and I've certainly been guilty of it, we've pursued things that we found passionately interesting and exciting, but they really weren't relevant to anyone else, and I think people will then question that. So I think there's a balance. And, of course, every time the regulations became more restrictive, it was very disappointing when we were engineers, I think, to have to deal with that. But my experience over 23 years, and Ross has got longer experience than that, is there is always something new. We had a double diffuser, we had F-ducts, we've had blown diffusers to argue about, to try and develop, to try and win the race on. And I think there will be, as we prohibit some of these errors, which perhaps aren't relevant outside of what we do, there's always been something new, something fresh. So, and there has to be. If we ever can't innovate in Formula One, then I think it will be very disappointing for all of us.
Ross, this is obviously your absolute field of expertise.
Well, I agree with everything Martin said. I think Formula One has to be the pinnacle of motorsport technically, commercially. I think the fascination of Formula One for me is that combination of the sport, the drivers, and the technology, and the fact that championships can be won by a good driver in a great car, sometimes a great driver in a good car, never a great driver in a poor car. So yeah, that's what makes Formula One so unique. We've got to have that technology to add that ingredient to Formula One. I think we do need to always be mindful of keeping the technology relevant. In our case, at the moment, KERS systems, which are being used in Formula One, that's having a direct spin-off into our road car side. The great thing about Formula One is it just accelerates any developments. It's so intense. This sporting war that we have just accelerates every technology incredibly. And we find and develop technology in months that, you know, perhaps in the outside industry would take years, because we want to find that competitive edge. So we look at the battery technologies, which in fact McLaren worked with Mercedes to initiate. Those battery technologies for KERS are now going down into the road cars. And that also makes us much more relevant for manufacturers to get involved. I think one of the exciting things in the future is the engines are going to come back into the equation, because, you know, the engines have been sterilized in a way. They're all very similar. They're all homologated. No one really talks about the engines anymore. We want to get that back in, because you know, there's a lot of exciting technology coming through with engines. We've got this new engine coming, which perhaps we'll talk about a little bit later. But I'm really excited that engines are now going to be part of the equation. They're not just a spacer between the chassis and the gearbox, and they're going to be an exciting bit that we can put back in and we can talk about, and we can create relevance again for manufacturers and transport.
I think we should talk about the engines now, actually. Maybe a couple of quick points of view. Obviously, it was announced yesterday, or confirmed yesterday, by the FIA. It's 1.6-litre V6 turbo engines from 2014 onwards. There's some debate about the rev limit and what effect that will have on the fans. And let's hear some points of view. Who's got a point of view on this next direction that Formula One is going on? Anybody want to make a... Yes, gentlemen here, please. Just wait for the... Hang on, stand up, please, and wait for the microphone to come. What do you think? Is it the right direction for Formula One?
I'm not sure about 1.6. If Formula One is going to be the pinnacle, to have a smaller engine than other Formula have, I'm not quite sure is the right way to go. But I've been following Formula One since the early 70s, and it seems to me that the best time we had is when there was an equivalency between the 3-litre DFVs and the 1.5-litre turbos. Was anything like that ever considered while you were talking about engine regulations?
Who wants to take that? Bob, do you want to answer that one?
I think that the 3-litre engine and the 1.5 equivalency that you mentioned is very relevant, but you know, we also can remember that the 1.5 eventually outperformed the 3-litre. So I think that this is the right direction to go in. I think it's very relevant for the motor manufacturers, and as mentioned by both Ross and Martin, we have to look at being aligned with our partners in these things and being able to get the benefit through to the public as a whole. And I think it's very important that we do that. I always put the best analogy I can think of for Formula One as that between sort of Formula One similar to space or military development, where we're looking entirely at performance. It's not necessarily, as with the motor manufacturer, geared to doing it under a budget. So performance is the key. And I think that we can do an awful lot to help the motor manufacturers develop their products. And that's what we should be focusing on.
Okay, thank you for that. Any other quick points of view on this? Yep, gentleman at the back with the beard. Stand up, please. Thank you.
Well, if you have a cost cap, why can't you have engines of any number of cylinders, as long as it's met within the cost cap? Why can't you have V4 because Renault like V4, and have V6 because Mercedes like V6? It's as long as they cost the same amount of money, you should just go for it. It's a part of technology, you can exploit it.
Martin, you want to do that one quickly?
I think it's an issue of risk management. Sounds strange, but we're in a situation at the moment where there are three manufacturers, automotive manufacturers, and one independent manufacturer in Formula One. The automotive manufacturers have, over the history of Formula One, been very significant investors in our sport. And I think we need to create an environment where the engine rules are sufficiently defined that people can come into it knowing that if they do a sound and good technology job, they will be competitive. I think the attraction, and I've certainly argued for diversity myself in the past, But I think the danger is that automotive manufacturers become inhibited of entering the sport if there's just too great a variety. Because if you, typically the regulations, although they're fixed, they in truth evolve. And I think what would happen if you had a range of engines, after a year, probably that it would be clear that either a V6 or a straight four or one solution was right. And at which point the manufacturer that's developed the alternate form, the alternate configuration, has to reinvest all that money. So I think it's about reducing the risk, so that I hope in the future that we can have four or five automotive manufacturers in Formula One at any time. They're always going to come in and out as it suits them, as it works for their marketing program. But I think we've got to create an environment that is attractive to those companies being in Formula One.
I think one point Martin touched on then is we're not going to get manufacturers come in with a V8 normally aspirated engine we have now. Nobody's interested. The new engine does create fresh opportunity for manufacturers to come in, and that's another vital reason why we need a new engine. Because who's going to come in and build a V8 18,000 RPM engine these days? No manufacturers are interested. So it gives a fresh opportunity and a more relevant specification for manufacturers to join.
Okay, thank you for that. Right, is Daniel Golding here? Daniel Golding, is that you?
It is.
You had a question about exclusivity and access.
Yeah, Formula One has always built itself around a concept of exclusivity. How do you think that needs to balance itself out with getting fans involved with the sport?
That's for you, Graham.
That's a good question, Daniel. It is and has to be a balance at the end of the day. As we just saw in the previous question, Formula One is the pinnacle of motorsport, and it has to have an element of exclusivity. However, I think there is a lot of ways in which we can open the sport up to a lot more people, in particular with new media, with different ways of communicating. And I think, I'd love to hear your opinions on it. I hope the teams are doing a lot of initiatives to open themselves up more to the fans. I know from our point of view, we're a new team in Formula One, but one of the things that we've done at Silverstone is we've hired Stowe School for the next 5 years. And we've created like a fan area there. People can come and camp with the team. The mechanics all stayed there last year, and people could just interact. We can't do that in the paddock. The paddock's incredibly tightly controlled, not by the teams, I hasten to add, but by the commercial rights holder. So what we wanted to do was try and take the team at an event and open it up more to more fans, as many as possible. And that was a really successful event last year. We had some fabulous feedback from fans. And because Stowe is absolutely massive, there's still a few spaces. So if anybody wants to go along, have a look at the website. But I think initiatives like that help. But it does have to be balanced up with the exclusivity side. For whatever reason, and I could have gone on for hours on the previous question about restrictions and resource restrictions, Formula One does require an awful lot of money to compete, and to generate that money you have to have a commercial structure that includes high degrees of exclusivity, and that's just a fact. But I do think there's a lot that the teams can do to be a lot more open.
And Mark Turner is a follow-up question to that about remembering the BMW pit lane park. There's Mark, helpfully sitting right in the middle, but we'll get a microphone to you anyway. Do you want to just follow up with that question, Mark?
Thank you, yes. My question is that front of house at a Grand Prix is a very buzzy and atmospheric place to be, but teams don't want to spend much time there. A long time ago, you had the BMW pit lane park. Great fun, really good access by BMW. Santander Grand Prix do have their display with bits and bobs, but you guys have so much stuff that you can show us. Not necessarily bringing out the drivers for autographs, not necessarily along those lines, but you have so much history, so much material that you can have on display at Grand Prix that we can come and enjoy. But it does all seem to be somewhat hidden, and that's something I welcome your comments on.
That's a very good point, I think. Would you like to start with that one, Bob?
You know, I had a horrible feeling I was going to get that as well. So. Yeah, I think it's a very good point. I think we have to be quite candid with you on what we're looking at. The BMW and the Santander programs are operated primarily by those sponsors. They're not, you know, whilst they are part of the team and supported by the team, the cost is borne by the sponsors. And that's possibly part of the problem. I mean, I'm sure what Graham is doing, which is an incredible initiative for fans, for everybody, for Silverstone, is a lot cheaper than actually taking a stand at a Grand Prix. And that's where part of the problems are. It's prohibitive for us to be able to do that, much as we probably like to do it. Maybe we can do something as a photo program, a great idea, and maybe we can look at that going forward, and where all teams participate and we can share the cost amongst them. So I think it's a very good suggestion. I hope that goes some way to answering it. It is not an easy thing for us. In India, for instance, we will do a great deal in India for fan participation. You know, Virgin, being based in UK, will do that as well. We know Santander do it across the board. Mercedes, I'm sure, do some parts for us. But you know, I think each team probably looks at its main venue to try to support that, and does do. But we could do more. I agree completely.
Martin.
It's clear that Formula One in recent years hasn't done enough to reach out to fans, to embrace fans, and that's one of the reasons that we're sat here today. You know, we have introduced autographic sessions at every circuit now. We are trying to reach out. We teams aren't in the commercial control of Formula One. There are a limit to what we are allowed to do, incidentally. You know, I had an incident yesterday. We were trying to take a road car to Silverstone, and they wanted to charge us £15,000 to take it there. So just to place a road car there for a bit of public interest. So I think, you know, there's a limit to what we can do, but I think we are now trying to listen to what people want. We're trying to reach out. We must also remember, of course, that a Grand Prix is where, you know, members of the team and the drivers, they've got a job to do. They've got a race, they've got to deal with the requirements of our sponsors. But undoubtedly, we've got to try and do more. And I hope we're already showing signs of that. But I think they're good points made, and something that we've got to try harder at.
Is Steve Ilhan here? Steve Ilhan? Because he had a very good question about team radio. I'm going to read it anyway, because even though he's not here. About what's to stop the feeds from being released to the general public? Obviously, it's sort of selected at the moment by the FOM race director, but what's to stop all the feeds of the team radio being released to general public at races? Now, you and I had a conversation many, many years ago at Spa, saying that you, when you were at Ferrari, saying that you'd be happy to open that up as long as everybody else did. Where is that at the moment, Ross?
It is the driver pits communications are open. So it's up to the commercial rights holder to decide what gets broadcast. But the pit to driver channel is completely open. All the teams have made it available. So,
but not just talking about the broadcast now, I'm talking about if you're actually at the racetrack in terms of getting it out there.
Well, at the racetrack, really down to the commercial rights holder. I mean, it's available. The teams have all agreed that it's a good initiative to make that information available to the broadcaster and available at the circuit. So it's really, and I wasn't aware that it wasn't available at the circuit. I know some other forms of racing, you can tap in, you can have a listening device to tap into different cars and listen to what they're saying. And that's, I think there's a huge number of things that we need to improve on in terms of both the spectacle at the track and watching a race from home. I think we're making some inroads into the use of computer or internet technology. And then my wife now looks at all the split times when she sat at home watching the race. And that's something we didn't have a few years ago. In fact, she gives me a hard time if I haven't spotted something she saw. So, but yeah, we have to make inroads into all those areas. You know, we're perhaps competing even more. I think one of the things we have to overcome is that the exclusivity has bred a certain attitude in a lot of the drivers and certain members of the teams, and we have to break that down. If you're in NASCAR, you know, as a driver, you're going to meet the fans, you're going to spend time with them, you're going to have to devote time to them. And it's seen as part of your role and part of your job. And unfortunately, in making the driver so exclusive, the attitudes need to change a bit, and they need to get more used to the fact that we've got to open up start drivers on that path from the beginning of their career, so we don't have to change them later on. Mm.
Good point.
I mean, just on this particular point, it wasn't that many years ago, Ferrari and McLaren were spending not just tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands, to have digitally encrypted secret radios so we couldn't listen to each other. And certainly the thought of releasing that was very foreign. It was, again, a very early decision in FOTA that we said, you know, at the time, in truth, we owned the rights to the radios. We gave it to the commercial rights holder and said, here it is, you please exploit it. So it was quite a big shift, you know, from spending lots of money so that no one else could hear you to actually offering it for free. So the teams have given it to the commercial rights holder. I think we've got to work with the commercial rights holder to make sure that we're making the full and proper use of it all.
You got a comment on this, Graham?
I think Ross is right in that in terms of the value chain, we pass all that information on to the commercial rights holder. And I really do wish that more people could hear it for a number of reasons. Strange enough, my wife does exactly the same as your wife and follows all the split times and sends me texts during the session on what's going on with this and the other. But in particular, from our point of view, we're a team that's not at the front of the grid, and yet we have a very, very strong fan base spread throughout the world. And so we have a lot of people who are very, very keen to understand what's happening within our race. And I'd love it if you could hear what was going on the radio. A high point for me this year was qualifying in Monaco. You know, we didn't qualify anywhere near the front. So you'd be thinking, well, what was so interesting about that? But if you'd had the benefit of hearing Timo Glock on the radio throughout that session and going into a lap where, trust me, he got a car to go around the circuit much quicker than the car really should have, you would have been thoroughly entertained, because for all we've got a job of work to do, we were highly entertained by his comments. And I wish everyone could hear it, because it adds to the fabric of the sport massively. I really.
How many people here do what Ross's wife does, and that is follow everything on split times when they're watching the television at the same time? Okay. And how many people have got some other kind of feed coming in additionally, like Twitter feeds or any of those sort of things with what the teams are all doing? So this is stuff that wasn't, that's the majority, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it just demonstrates how the world has changed,
yeah,
and
exactly.
How we've got to catch up.
Yes. Right, is Peter Doyle here? Yep, there he is. Now, he had a question, which I'm sure is of concern to an awful lot of people here, and I'm sure he's looking at me as if to say, please remind me what my question was, which is all about the whole sticky topic of free-to-air TV versus whatever may happen in the future, pay TV, et cetera, on Formula One. So if you'd like to stand up and give us your question, that'd be great, Peter.
Obviously with the BBC contract coming to an end next year, what can FOTA assure the fans, or what can FOTA do to try and assure that it stays on free-to-view TV?
I think that has to be you to start there, doesn't it?
Okay. Well, firstly, I think all of the FOTA teams believe in free-to-air. I think there will be parts of the market where maybe there's some differentiated service offered. But if you think of the fundamental business model of Formula One teams, we are about creating brand differentiation and brand exposure. All of these names that we have on our shirts today and we have on our cars require us to have a large audience. And historically, in order to do that, you had to be on free-to-air. Our current contract requires that it remains on free-to-air, and the teams now that we operate more effectively together through FOTA, then you know, clearly we're going to safeguard our business and the interests of the fans in this regard. So, but I think, you know, as we just highlighted by a show of hands just now, it isn't now media isn't as simple as is it on BBC or ITV. I think fans want a lot more information, and you know, we are. It's incredible. We talked about radio. We're in a very data-rich sport. You know, we have lots of telemetry data, lots of strategic information, lots of modelling and simulation that every team is doing. So we're an absolute ideal sport to feed the real fans additional information apart from the traditional TV feed. So we've got to try and unscramble that, and it isn't as simple as, you know, we mustn't go, you know, we must stay free to air. We must stay away from pay-per-view. I think we've now got to really embrace that media is really multifaceted. We've got to make sure that there's a mass-free entry to be able to see Grand Prix, but there's an awful lot of people who want other information that you won't get through a free-to-air route. But I think it's very clear that the teams now are in a much better position to, you know, and I know, you know, there's a speculation that of News Corp's interest. You know, let's be clear, the teams are working together. This sport isn't going anywhere without the teams. So the teams, if we remain together, which we try hard to do, we overcome our competitive instinct on occasions. But if we do, then we can control the direction of this sport. And, you know, we're not trying to do so for any other reason than the best interest of the sport and consequently the best interest of the fans.
Bob, what's your view on this? Free to air, how important is it to you and to Force India and your sponsors?
I do endorse what Martin's saying, but also I think we have to be pragmatic going forward into the future. I think that, you know, perhaps the BBC, for instance, won't be able to follow all of the unlocking of the things that that Martin's doing. So I'm probably a little bit more open than that. I think that, you know, we looked in here, for instance, and we did the vote, we were just on a fair. How many people here have got Sky TV? You
know? How many people here have got a Sky platform here? So can you put your hands right up? It's a bit hard to see. Okay. So probably just over 50%.
And I think that, you know, people are now looking that sports are tending to go down that route. And whilst obviously it's a primary interest for us to try and keep it free to air to get the maximum out, we've also got to look at the quality of what we can do longer term. So I'm a little bit more open. I'm not putting it as a major goal for Force India's point of view.
Another quick show of hands. Who'd struggle to follow Formula One, or who wouldn't be able to afford to, or feel that they would probably not follow it anymore if it went on to a pay-view model? And be honest here. Be honest. Yeah, so probably about a third. Interesting.
Mm. Well, I think what's interesting is that's a third of what are probably committed fans here. Yeah. You know, there are a lot less committed fans than probably those that we've got clustered around us at the moment.
I think the other thing to highlight is even for the big teams, the income from television is only a proportion of our income. And the majority of our income comes from our partners and our sponsors, and without that, we're not viable. So the television model is a vital part of the media model, is a vital part of our income. But we also have all our partners to consider, and if we don't give them the exposure they need, which almost comes down to the number of people watching the race, then we'll be in trouble. So it's all right lifting this bit by going pay-per-view. If we destroy that part, we're in a worse case.
It's a good point, because it is very, very tightly measured, isn't it? I mean, it's very scientific now, the measuring of you and Graham.
I think exactly the same point that Ross just made, actually, which is our business model is very different from the bigger teams. And the money, the central money from TV rights goes into a central pot, and it's divided by the commercial rights holder. But as a team, we get very, very little of that. So I would say 95% of our revenue is based upon commercial partnerships, sponsorships, all of which rely upon having mass appeal. And so if there were a change to that model, it would significantly affect a team like ourselves. We get very, very little from TV money. And so, you know, we like to think we've got a fairly robust model, but it would certainly have to change if there was pay-per-view. And I personally wouldn't be in favour of it.
Okay, bit of a change of pace now. Is Matt Davey here? Matt Davey has a question which is a complete, and now for something completely different, in fact, about countries.
Yeah, the question is, what country would you like F1 brought to? I know they're bringing back USA next year.
It's always a hot, thank you very much, Matt. It's always a very hot topic, isn't it, with countries that we go to. Is it appropriate to go to these places? But what countries would you really like to go to? So I'm going to start with that one.
Well, I think, you know, that we're going to the USA, but we've really got to go to the USA. That's to say, going there, having a race, and coming home isn't good enough, and that's what we've done in the States before. You know, we have, you know, after soccer or football, as we prefer to call it, you know, the only other world sport is Formula One, and we're not really in America. America doesn't need us, but I think we need to conquer it, and I think we need to go there. We need to be two races a year. We need to have a proper marketing program. We've got to create the interest. You know, we've demonstrated that within Europe, people understand Formula One. We've got a fan base, also in some parts of Asia, Japan, obviously South America. But I think what's a worry is that we're not doing enough. You know, we talk about China, India. I imagine Bob wants to go there. I think that those are exciting markets. They're markets, again, we can't just go have a race and come home. We actually got to try harder. Formula One hasn't had to sell itself in the past. You know, the fans have come to us. We've got to recognize there's lots of competition in the entertainment business. We're just part of it. We've actually got to do a lot better. So I think we have to conquer America. That's a five-year program. We've got to be on the East Coast, the West Coast, and we've really got to make sure that, you know, there's a great opportunity there. You know, there's obviously NASCAR in the southeast corner, but they really, you know, I think they can really get Formula One if we go there, educate, explain, promote, market our sport.
Just pick you up on that. You're talking about two races in America then, one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast, or alternating?
I think there should be. I think it's a big enough market and it's an important enough market that we should be over there. And I think, you know, nothing against Texas, and I hope that is a very successful race. But the natural hinterland for us, in my view, are the East Coast, West Coast. You know, Long Beach or, you know, around New York. You know, those are where we're going to really create the interest in Formula One. And I think we've got to get there.
Ross, you went on a lovely sabbatical year fishing for bonefish in New Zealand and all sorts of exotic locations with your wife, Jean. Did you sit anywhere and think it would be great to bring Formula One here?
I agree totally what Martin's been saying, so that's perhaps the commercial business side. If you look at the emotional side, and all of us love to go to countries where the fans are enthusiastic and where there's, you can really taste the passion that's going on, and one of the countries I remember where that was the case was Argentina,
yes,
which was a fantastic race. And you know, the climate there, the economic climate there is not correct, not what's needed to have a Formula One race. But those are races that really sort of raised your passion. And the races we go to now, there's several races we all look forward to because the fans are so enthusiastic. And it makes a difference to us to go somewhere where people are really enjoying the racing and you can hear the roar of the crowd. And so Argentina would be my favourite choice.
Very good stakes as well, aren't it? Well, Graham?
Well, you pinched my answer, Ross, completely. Yeah. I think Martin made an extremely good case for the commercial side, but if we're looking at the passion side, we do go to some places where the fans are a tad indifferent, to say the least. And we go to some places where they are knowledgeable, fanatical, obviously. And it would be great to go to some more places like that. I sense it would be a street circuit if we could go somewhere, because that really gets everybody as close as possible to the action. So I've never experienced racing in Argentina. It sounds like a cool place to go. If not, Newcastle would be quite good.
Newcastle. Newcastle's on the list, don't worry. Bob, you've had a very long career in racing. You've been all over the world. Which places float your boat? Where would you like to see a Grand Prix that there isn't one at the moment?
I mean, I think there's two comments really to make on it. One is, unfortunately, I'm, again, old enough to remember actually racing in Long Beach. And I think Martin's absolutely correct. You know, the West Coast and the East Coast are the natural homes for Formula One. And we're fully supportive of the Dallas one. And I'm hoping that can capture the West Coast element of it. But from our point of view as Formula One, I'd also like to think that the only major continent that we're not working on is Africa, and I'd like to see us go back there.
Yeah, good point. Follow-on question to this, is Robert Eek here? Yep, Robert had a question about whether you'd be prepared to step in and help if the teams...
Yeah, would you as teams be considering subsidising races which struggle financially? There's a lot of rumours about Spa at the moment, so, or would you, considering what Silverstone's done... sorry... in turning itself around, redeveloping the circuit privately, would you leave circuits as they are and to fend for themselves?
It's a good question, actually. The classic tracks, some of them, would you be prepared to support them if they were struggling? Yes. You personally, well, out of your own personal bank account.
Out of my own personal pocket? I'll just check. I think that we've got to have a much more flexible model, business model in Formula One. At the moment... I think that the model that's been pursued has been very successful in developing the sport. But I think if we lose some of the classic venues, then I think we really risk the heritage of our sport. So, you know, I think if you said to the teams, will you take a reduced fee and go to a place like Spa, then I'm sure we all would. I think what we've got to make sure, though, is that we say the same to the commercial rights holder. He's got much bigger pockets than any of us up here or any of the teams put together. So I think, in fairness, on occasion, I think he has been prepared to take a more flexible approach. But I think collectively we've got to decide where it's important to be and make sure that that we find a commercial solution so that that those circuits, historic ones, survive.
Quick show of hands, how important is it? Who thinks it's important to preserve Spa, for example, on the calendar? Right, okay. Monza? Yeah. Silverstone, no point in even asking. I'm sure you'll all say yes. Okay, good stuff. Right, where should we go to next? There's a great question here by, please let him be here, Clive Barlana. I think that's how you pronounce it. Here he is at the front. Barriana. Sorry, that was a typo, which, Barbara. Anyway, so the microphone's just behind you. You have a question about the Champions Trophy, which is a cracker.
Yes, it is. Obviously, we all love the races when our champions become champions, but then, unfortunately, we never actually get them to see be crowned the world champion. So I think a good idea would be, at the end of the season, somewhere like the O2 or the NEC, which is handy for me, to be honest.
Presumably he was a British champion, of course.
Yeah, hopefully. Instead of it, you have the usual celebrations that we don't get invited to, you could have an event where the champion gets awarded his trophy there, a few donuts in the car, and a great event for everybody.
So presumably we'd all be all seduced. I don't think it'll be at the O2 this year somehow, do you?
You never know. Hopefully if Martin works, and here he will be.
Yeah, there you go. You have to work your magic. I think that's a cracking question. What do you think? Maybe Ross, could you kick off that one?
Yeah, no, I think, there is an event, but it's an exclusive event. And, which is the problem of Formula One. And it's difficult to do at the last race because we have a lot of technology in the sport, and there's a period of settling down before the results are final. So, we don't want a situation where we have a premature announcement of the world champion and then find that, there's a widget that's not quite right and it's not everything, because that would be... But I think creating an event, which could be a whole motorsport event, and part of it is crowning the world champion, would be a fantastic idea.
Graham?
Technically the issue is it's not our championship, it's the FIA's championship. So as Ross points out, there is an awards ceremony held at the end of the year, and they give out awards for all the FIA championships, of which I hadn't realised how many there were until you go to that event. It's a full-on marathon. But I think it would be a good idea to really make use of that as an opportunity. It'd be great to get fans more involved. I think the event traditionally has been in Monaco, and I think this year it's going to be in India. Everyone used to pile into it when it was in Monaco because it's pretty easy to get to, and it's a global sport, so India should be no different. But there really should be a chance for more people to share in that. But it's quite a long event. You have to bring your Kit Kat with you and everything.
There's been a suggestion that maybe the world champion, maybe even the top three in the world championship, should go on like a bit of a tour, run a car in one or two cities around the world, and that kind of stuff. Do you think there's any mileage in that? That is something you could control.
No, it is, and we do things like that. I mean, we've shut Woking from time to time, not as often as I'd like, and run a Formula One car through it to celebrate a world championship. So we do those events; they're within our control. But I think the crowning of a world champion would be a fantastic event. And at the moment, it's intermingled with dust racing across the Sahara and various other things. So I think you could make a great event out of it, but it's not something we control.
Okay, final question then in this section. Is Jason Eaker here? Jason Eaker, gentleman here, who has an environmentally influenced question.
Hello, yes.
He's brought it with him, that's well prepared.
I've brought it with me, yeah. How does Formula One's drive to be green balance with the increased use of tyres this year during the race?
Very good question. Ross, you're using a lot of tyres up.
Yes, that's a very good question. I think in our defence, Martin actually took a great initiative to have a look at the carbon footprint of Formula One teams and how we could improve that. And a lot of our carbon footprint is obviously transportation of all the equipment we have. So there's been a strong initiative to cut all that down. And we now take a limited number of people to the track. There's a cap on how many people you can have there. We've looked at all the initiatives we can to reduce the impact we have. It's fair to say the cars, the racing cars, are a tiny part of that impact. But the important thing about racing cars is the message they can give. So, you know, with the new engine, it's not about the fact the new engine is going to be efficient, more efficient in itself. It's the message it gives that it's, I don't like using this word at my age, but it's cool to have a really efficient engine, an engine that's going to race on a lot less fuel. And we're setting dramatic targets for reducing the amount of fuel we race on in the future. So 30, 40, 50% less than what we're racing on now. But still with the same power and still with the same excitement. We don't want to have fuel economy racing, but we want to set targets for the engineers. So what I should do is ask Pirelli what they do with the old tyres. Some of it gets left on the track, as you know. And that's one of the features of this year. But I'm sure Pirelli do something about recycling the tyres. But, you know, they've actually helped the show enormously this year. And, you know, the very benign tyres we had in the past, where there was no very little variation in performance. So there's very little opportunity in the race to have different strategies or to have cars in different situations. That's really opened up this year. And I think the introduction of Pirelli, and all credit to them, because they've done a very, very good job. And I think we're all a bit anxious about the change. But they've done a really good job, and what they've done is opened up the racing enormously and made it far more interesting. So we could possibly cut down the number of tyres if the racing was boring, then we'd actually, you know, lose the whole event.
Bob?
Yeah, I think personally that we should maybe compartmentalise things. I think the job of Formula One is to develop the technologies, or help to develop the technologies, as with the V6 programme, where we can genuinely put benefit into the whole economy through the manufacturers and everything else. And I think that should be one focus that we maintain. I think through the efforts of FOTA, it would be inexcusable not to waste more than we need to do in terms of travel and everything else that goes with it. But I think that Formula One, for me, maybe I'm a bit of a dinosaur in this one, but I see it as a celebration of excess. You know, we have the most powerful engines, we have the best show in motor racing, we have the best parties, we have the prettiest girls. We should not lose that, and I don't think we need to go down that road. We are a show at the end of the day, and the show must be maintained. But I think we can also do more than our part on the environmental side in what we're doing.
How many show of hands again? How important do you think it is that Formula One starts to show increased green credentials, just so that you don't have that argument down the pub all the time with that really annoying friend of yours who keeps saying it's an environmental catastrophe? How important is it, do you think, that Formula One seems more green to the outside world? Quick show of hands. Right, so most of you agree with Bob Fernie then, that it's about... There you are, Martin, there's your answer. Okay, I think we've got time for just... We're running a little bit early, actually, so we've got time for just one more question. And let's see, what would be a good one to go for? Yeah, I know. Is Harry Wilmot here? There he is. He's got a question which looks like has a degree of self-interest involved in it, given his age, to do with how you get involved in working in Formula One.
Is there anything the sport can do further to help students and aspiring engineers to get into the sport when they leave university?
Thank you for that, Harry. Ross, you're an inspirational figure to young engineers around the world. How do you do it?
I think sport does do quite a lot. We all support various initiatives. We start with Formula One in schools, which is this competition for young children to build a little CO2-powered projectile, and they race each other all over the world now. And they learn to design that in school. And so we start to try and sow the seeds of an engineering challenge and a team challenge for young kids, and that's been very successful. Then we move on to Formula Student, which is the initiatives that a lot of universities are involved in now. And a team of students design and build a racing car. And then they compete against each other. The big event is at Silverstone coming up shortly. And I think we've got 130 universities now competing against each other. And I've talked to students who said they've gone to particular universities because they had a Formula student program. And that's a fantastic initiative because it's engineering. The commercial side, they have to present a commercial model of how they have raised the money and how if this they treat the car as a commercial project, so they have to design it to be sold. And so how would they build the model to make it commercially viable? There's team building. There's driver management because someone has to drive the car. And so that's a fantastic initiative that a lot of people in Formula One support. And you know, our chief engineer on the race team came up through that program. And I think every team in Formula One takes students on. I mean, we have 10, 15, 20 graduates in our company. They're great because they're cheap. They're enthusiastic. I mean, amazing enthusiasm. Massive energy, they work all the hours. And it actually invigorates a lot of our staff to have these young people who are champing at the bit, trying to make an impression, trying to progress in life. And so I think Formula One does do a lot to help. Perhaps we could do more, but there is a lot going on.
Anybody else got a point they'd like to make?
I don't know whether many of you are aware, but you know, Force India, in addition to everything that Ross is saying from the point of view of Formula One as a whole and obviously our support in Silverstone, but Force India actually launched the its academy earlier this year. Now, that academy is actually in three parts. The first one has been the driver launch, where you know Force India has actually gone around the whole of India looking for potential a new Lewis Hamilton or whatever it is we want to look at it in. And you know, the second part of it will come through is the vocational side, where we're looking at bringing in young engineers and bringing them through in India. And the third one is the academic side. We will be sponsoring talented young engineers that don't have the funds to be able to go through. So there's a very strong initiative for Force India. We're quite passionate about bringing young people into the sport and helping them. Obviously, ours is India-centric, as you can appreciate. But to answer your question, we are very, very active in it.
Well, that's it then for the team principals. I'd like you to give a big hand to Martin Whitmarsh, Ross Brawn, Graham Loudon and Bob Burnley.
Thanks for listening to part one of the Photo Fans Forum podcast, brought to you by Autosport and USP Content. Don't forget to listen to parts two and three.